This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Third and 16. Mahomes rolling out. Looking. Firing. Intercepted. Picked up by Cooper DeJean. Gets a block. DeJean is... touchdown! Now the Eagles get it back. We're going to run some clock, or maybe throw the dagger. Hurts going deep for it all. Devontae Smith, he has got it. Touchdown! For the second time, the Vince Lombardi Trophy is headed to Philadelphia. Eagles fly in Super Bowl 59.
I don't know about you guys today, but I'm just here for the Kendrick Lamar Drake feud, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I don't even know what the hell that is all about, to be quite honest. I just know that I woke up today and I'm hearing people. I'm driving in. I was listening to Joe and they go to Joe Goes to Break. I turn on Kiss 98.5 and I hear Janet and Nick talking about Drake and Kendrick Lamar. And I saw something on it last night before I went to bed, but I really have no idea what's going on with it.
Well, the whole feud started, when he released the song Not Like Us. That was
right.
That was where it all came
I know
from.
That there's something going on there, but something happened last night, right? Didn't there were some lyrics?
He performed the song, which in itself is just him attacking.
Oh, okay.
But he also had Serena Williams there, who is involved kind of like... It's a whole, like, he said,
all right,
she
we've
said,
already gone to a spot yeah, where I'm, right. I'm you're losing me.
Well, Serena Williams, the tennis player.
I know that.
Player, right?
I know,
we're still
yeah.
in the sports
See,
realm.
I
we're
know.
Still there.
I got you.
But she was there as, like, one of the backup dancers. And she was, like, someone that was... Drake wanted to have a collaboration with her, and she didn't want anything to do with it. But he was, like, kept pursuing it. She's like, no, dude, like, go away from me.
Wow,
and
okay.
So
I'm learning this. I didn't know this.
Yeah. It was, you know, it's a lot. But
and then did Drake tweet something or something like that last night? I don't know.
Not that I know of.
Oh,
he was
okay.
like, from what Joe said, he was halfway around the world.
Right. Yeah. He's not even around. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whatever. We had that was the biggest drama last night. Apparently, in the whole 4 hours of the Super Bowl, the biggest drama last night that occurred through the Super Bowl was what happened at halftime between the Kendrick Lamar and his halftime performance and Drake, because there wasn't much drama in the game. That's for damn sure. Welcome to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. You feeling good today? How you feeling about what happened last night? I'm guessing you're feeling pretty good. Because even though the Buffalo Bills did not make the Super Bowl, even though the Buffalo Bills aren't bringing a Lombardi home to Western New York for a parade on Wednesday, which we all would have loved, even though you were really, you know, mad and upset and angry about it a couple weeks ago and had to go through all the hurt and the frustration and the emotion of it, I think last night at least took a little sting away in some way, shape, or form for a lot of people, at least for today, right? I mean, as we go on in the offseason, of course, time heals wounds, and you're still going to look back and say, I can't believe it, you know, Bills, and you rue the whole situation, them not getting there. But man, the Chiefs losing last night the way they did on the NFL's biggest stage like that was, A, to me, surprising. Not that the Eagles didn't have a chance like to do that. I think we heard from a lot of people who said, hey, I think that the Eagles could actually blow them out. It's just, who would have thought? Because the Chiefs just don't lose games like that. They just don't. I mean, the Chiefs, they play close games, and they generally wind up winning them. But when you play with such a small margin for error as they had all year, And then you go play a team with the kind of talent that the Eagles had, and you don't kind of make up for those little margins, then that's when things can really get away from you. And it did very quickly last night and very awfully for the Kansas City Chiefs. That was a beatdown. The score, 40-22, was not even an indication of how badly beaten the Chiefs were by the Philadelphia Eagles. By the end of the third quarter, I was looking. I think the Eagles, let's see. Let me check this real quick. I'm going to look. The Chiefs had 275 total yards of offense, 275. They had 120 in the fourth quarter. So 155 before the end of the third, that's it? At the end of the game, you look at the numbers. I mean, they had the one long pass to Worthy for the touchdown, 50-yarder. And, you know, credit to them for that as they're trying to come back. And, you know, it's the last score of the game. It's late in the game. And then that was it. The Eagles just kneel it out after that. But it was a beatdown. It reminded me of Super Bowls of when I was a kid. And every time you got to the Super Bowl, it was like big blowout. Now, some of you may remember because we've had really good Super Bowls for the most part for like the last, you know, 25 years. But in the 1980s, really up until the Bills played the Giants and lost, you know, at the end of the game when Norwood's field goal misses, up until that game really, throughout the 1980s, most of the Super Bowls were blowouts that I remember growing up as a kid. And then we had a few here or there, but really for the last 25 years, we've had more good than bad Super Bowls. Last night was a bad Super Bowl as far as the aesthetics of the game and the scoreboard and just blowout right away. I mean, at halftime, it was 24-0. It was a good Super Bowl, though, for a lot of people who just wanted to see the Chiefs lose. And that's what happened. And how did they lose? Well, I think we saw last night what we saw a couple of years ago when the Chiefs lost to the Buccaneers, 31-9. And in that game, the Buccaneers really just got after Patrick Mahomes. He was a little hobbled in that game, I think, but whatever. They got after him. And that was, remember, after that game, that's how you got to get to Mahomes. That's how you got to get to Mahomes. And that was after the Bills had made the AFC Championship against the Chiefs that year. And that was the talking point going in. You got to get a better pass rush. That was not the year they signed Von Miller, though. It wasn't until after the next year when the Bills lost in the championship game to the, I'm sorry, not the championship, the they lost in the AFC Divisional 13-second game. That, after that is when they signed Von Miller. But it's the same situation. And look, I'm right there with all of you. I'll say it this way. I think there's two things that need to be blended here. There's a lot of nuance that needs to be involved here. Because I'm going to relate this to the Bills, as a lot of you have. And of course, right? I mean, that's the team you love. That's the team you follow. That's the team we cover here and I talk about on a daily basis. But there's a lot of nuance here. I've seen, you know, the word, oh, it's just such an indictment on what the Bills have done. I think that's a pretty strong word. I mean, the Eagles are all time, I think, you know, defensive front, what they're able to do and how talented they are and how good they are. It's kind of an indictment on the rest of the league, if you want to say that way. But no doubt, the Bills are certainly not good enough there. And they haven't been. And once again, they have to find another way to do it. It doesn't have to be one extreme or the other. Again, let's talk about those little margins. That's the little margins. I was thinking back to that game the Bills played 2 weeks ago in Kansas City. The Bills didn't play a good game. They didn't. Kansas City played better. The Bills got outcoached. The Bills got outplayed. But despite all that, they were still within 3 points at the end of the game. Right? I mean, despite having things not go their way, maybe a couple calls, whatever, and Josh Allen not playing well in the first half, and the defense playing poorly and not getting able to be able to get to Patrick Mahomes, they were still within 3 points of beating the Kansas City Chiefs. That's not a solace. That's not for me to tell you, oh, yeah, everything's okay. I am going to tell you they're still a good team and they'll continue to be good and be knocking on the door again. But it just goes to show you how dominant the Eagles were last night and really how they've kind of been for most of this year. They're not perfect. The Eagles weren't a perfect team this year. They had a lot of drama off the field, but even on the field. You go back and take a look at the Eagles season and how it unfolded. They were really, really good all year. They did lose the Washington Commanders on a night game, 32-21. Who would have thought the Commanders were going to have the season they had and then ultimately play each other again in the NFC Championship? And then towards the end of the year, they lost a couple of games, one to the Cowboys, one to the Saints. And I have to remember here, was Hurts even playing one of those games either way? They weren't perfect, but they were damn good all year. I mean, they beat the Lions, the Vikings, the Commanders, Packers, Steelers, Texans, playoff teams here. And give them a lot of credit. They deserve to win last night. But there is certainly still, to get back to what I was saying about the Bills and relating it, there is certainly still a perspective here of you have to get better up front to get pressure on the quarterback like a team like the Eagles were able to do. I don't know if you can attain that level, though. Yes, that's the goal. That's the goal. I don't know if you can get to where they were. They were destroying Patrick Mahomes last night. There was a sequence in the game, and I tweeted about this last night during the game. There was a sequence during the game that Mahomes, on two straight plays, was sacked. This was, I think, in the second quarter. Two straight plays, he was sacked. So know what they did on third down? They got him to roll out. They said, well, we can't keep him in the pocket. He's going to get sacked. We just can't. We cannot block these guys. So they moved the pocket on third down. You know what happened on that play? Because they had to move the pocket and he rushed a throw. They had good coverage. Pick six the other way. So because of the two sacks, it forced them to do something different on offense. Turns into an even worse result for them. So they get the ball after the next kickoff. They don't even want to throw the ball. First down, run. Second down, run. Now you're in third and long. And because it's third and long, here come the Eagles pinning their ears back, another sack. It was just compounding and piling up the pressure. It really forced the Chiefs to completely play a way different game than they wanted to play. And that's not Vic Fangio's scheme. Some of it is, of course, he's a coach. He deserves some credit. They have some dudes, man. They have dudes. They have talent. They have players. I know. You want the Bills to have those. Every team in the league wants that. Every team. 31 other teams are going today. How do we get that? How do we have what the Eagles have? You also have to be careful, though. Here's the nuance. Of being prisoners of the moment. Yes, it's great what they have. And it's not the entire team. They do a lot of things well. And you have certain restrictions all over the place on how you can go about acquiring those players and getting them. I say, though, you do what you can this year to go out and get a Myles Garrett, get a Max Crosby if he's available, whatever. I mean, Josh Sweat, who dominated last night with 2.5 sacks, I tweeted at one point, Josh Sweat's going to be a free agent next month, which he is. And then by the end of the game, I'm like, he's going to be way too pricey. Yes, he's very, very, very good player. But I don't think the money he's going to get on the open market might be, like, to me, overpaying now. Don't be a prisoner of the moment. Because now, because of his performance last night, teams are like, we want that. We'll pay whatever it takes to get it. And maybe that's the Bills. They say, I don't care. I got to pay him. But after last night's performance, he'll probably have a market value that's even way higher than even I would want to go for a guy like that who has had 33 sacks over the last 4 years, 25.5 sacks over the last 3 years. He had 8 this year. He had 11 a couple years ago. It's a nice player. Probably a little bit better of a pass rusher than Greg Rousseau. But, and you're getting more out of that, same kind of body, but not like, oh my God, you have to pay him whatever he can command. That's being a prisoner of the moment. Don't do that either. I want to get your thoughts on what you saw yesterday, what you thought about the game, whatever is on your mind about it. Going to get some perspective today from a couple of different football minds. They cover a couple other teams, but also are dialed in on the NFL draft. Going to have Evan Lazar join the program at 10:30. We've had Evan on a lot. He covers the New England Patriots. He also covers the NFL draft, patriots.com, Catch 22. Patriots Catch 22 pod. Really, really great at what he does. Get his thoughts on last night, but also because the Bills are reportedly hiring Mike Pellegrino, who has been with the Patriots for the last 10 seasons. And he's been their cornerbacks coach. I don't know exactly what he'll do with the Bills. Probably nickel coach, because the Bills had Scott Booker depart for, ironically, the Patriots. So it'll be like kind of trading coaches. It might be an indication, another one that we've seen here, that the Bills may be moving towards a different type of philosophy and scheme on defense. Meaning maybe a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more man-to-man, something a lot of you have wanted to see. We actually saw more of that this year from the Bills. But Evan Lazar is going to join us at 10:30. Going to get his thoughts on the draft as well. And then John Ledyard, who does a great job covering the draft, has for many years. Now you can always listen to John, of course, with Tampa Bay Trey. They are on the Audibles and Analytics pod. And he's all over the draft. Covers the Bucks, also the Steelers. He grew up in Pittsburgh, still follows them very closely, talks about them a lot. But we'll get thoughts on a lot of things from both those guys. 10:30 is Evan Lazar. 11 a.m. is John Ledyard. My apologies. I'm just getting over being sick. I had a bad weekend. But that's okay. Made it better last night. I'm sure a lot of you have been there this week. I've heard from a lot of people. Kind of ran through the house last week. It was the kid. Then it was me. Then it was the wife. I'm just getting out of it. Now, you ever had that, like, where you feel really good? You're like, I just got to get over the finish line. So that's today. So help me out today. You can give me a call at 803-0550, looking for your thoughts on this game. And if you want it, how it relates to the Bills or whatever, we can do that here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you today on a Monday. We can call it a Buffalo Football Monday, a Super Bowl post Monday, a feeling really good the Chiefs lost Monday. Whatever it is for you, let's get out to the phone lines. Michael in Atlanta is first up. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Sal. Hey, I hope you feel better. Real quick, I'll get to my football stuff. So back in July, I started doing chopped garlic, one clove, chopped garlic every day, let it sit for 8 to 12 minutes, drink it down with some water. Man, my wife's been sick 3 times, my daughter 4 times, and I've gotten nothing in this household.
Wow. You got the remedies, buddy. You got the remedies. There you go. I'm feeling better today. Luckily, it hit a weekend where we didn't have as much going on, so I was able to rest a little bit more this weekend than normal. But, you know, it's that whole thing, like you think you're over the hump, and then you still got a little bit. It just kind of sucks.
And I'm telling you, man, check out that raw garlic thing, even University of Rochester did a study.
It'll also keep the vampires away, I hear, Mike.
And your friends.
All right, buddy.
Hey, so real quick, on the Bills game from 2 weeks ago, I know I mentioned it, and I agree. I've agreed all year long they needed help on defense. I was worried about, you know, the lack of that extra one or two pieces that they need. And again, they performed at that super high level, and that's why Josh got that MVP, you know, because they did so much with what little they had on offense and defense, but especially on offense, not having the pieces. But anyhow, I still think 2 weeks ago, though I'm not going to excuse, I still think they played two teams. I still think they played the Chiefs and the Steelers on the same day. You know what I mean by that. But getting back to what happened yesterday, I feel great. I thought I was a nice guy, but it just felt so good to see the Chiefs lose and all those sour pusses on the sideline with their hanging their heads. I loved watching that. So I wanted to add that. But I do think that they get that guy on defense, a little help, one or two extra big body strong guys on the defensive line, it's not so much they need to revamp the whole defensive line, but I think even one guy elevates everybody else because you can't double team everybody. So you have one more guy, you know, and I sure hope it's Myles Garrett. That'd be great, or Crosby. But either way, just that one guy changes a lot of dynamics. I wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you could definitely, I agree with that. I mean, the Bills' philosophy over the years has been kind of, you know, have its 1/11th, right? Everybody does their job and you don't have to have that guy. But they've tried and they went out and got Von Miller, which I still say to people, like, Von Miller, you have to understand the nuance, again, of why they did it when they did it. Did they overpay? If you want to say that because of the future part of the contract, for sure. Like, we knew that 3 years in, $20 million a year was going to be too much for his age, but you brought him in to help you win a Lombardi over the first couple years he was there, and man, he was unbelievable until he got hurt in Detroit, and they were paying a lot of money, and now they're paying for that. And he was still pretty good this year. Not $20 million good, but he was still pretty good. But they took a swing. I respect that. I don't know why anybody wouldn't. You want him to do that now, right? I mean, you can't have it both ways. If you want him to take a swing, it's going to cost you a lot, whether it's assets or money. But it's you're trying to win a Super Bowl. And I think you have to do something like that because that one guy, and they kind of changed that philosophy of that one guy could be your game record that everybody has to focus on, as you're saying, Mike. And then it elevates everybody else, hopefully. Let's go to CJ in Buffalo. Hi, CJ.
Hey, how you doing, Sal?
Good.
Good. Hey, real quick, I don't even know if it's possible, but after watching the game last night, I came up with a thought. What would it be like to not sell the farm? I'm not saying bleep them picks, but go all in for a known commodity in Myles Garrett. We'd give up some draft picks. I know what it costs. But also add Khalil Mack out of free agency and release Von Miller, who I think is $16 to $17 million, that relieves us from the cap, gives us a little moving room. I just wanted to know what you thought about that, if possible.
Well, I think the mechanics of all that would be really tough, first of all. I don't know how much Khalil Mack is going to cost at his age, though. I mean, you're already – he's 33, I think? And people were upset when the Bills, you know, got Von Miller at that age, essentially. But either way, let's just say, okay, hold on. I do want to look at this. Dead money. To do that with Von, by the way, it might have to be a post-June 1 cut. That's your saving now $17 million, as you said. That's post-June 1. You don't even get that money freed up until June 1st if you do that. So that's very tough to do. So the mechanics of it, if you release Von Miller before June 1st, you're taking on $15 million in dead money, CJ, and you are giving yourself $8.3 million in cap relief. That's fine. The mechanics of that might be a little difficult, but sure. I mean, and then the other part of it is, you know, the assets you're giving up for Myles Garrett, I mean, I don't care at this point. Go do what you got to do, right? I mean, I'm with you there. I think, though, it's a little too much to ask what you're saying because I don't know what Khalil Mack's going to command either because Myles Garrett, you know, he'll cost a little money too, and eventually you're going to have to pay him. We'll see, you know, what approach they take. I'm not sure. I love the fact of adding two guys, though, CG, I do, whoever that is. Let's go to Nikki in Connecticut. Hi, Nikki.
Hey, brother. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm a lifelong Bills fan. And thank you for taking my call, by the way. Sorry.
Yep.
I'm a lifelong Bills fan. And admittedly, you know, after Kansas City, you know, took that game and, you know, everybody can feel different about it. Personally, I feel like we got hold, but it is what it is. I wasn't going to watch the game last night. You know, my wife talked me into it. She said, man, you love football. Think about the sport as a whole. You know, instead of just the teams and just enjoy it. So I say, you know what, fine. You know, I take her advice. And I don't regret it. I was so happy I watched the game. I feel like, personally, for myself as a fan and watching these games, I feel like it was just poetic justice. I would have felt even better if they would have been left on zero and a 50 burger would have been left on them, if you ask me, you know. But taking away the fan perspective and going into the nitty-gritty of the game, one thing I will say is there's a lot that I think the Bills can take from this game and look at how Philly played Kansas City, but just play the game as a whole. I mean, the fact that they didn't even blitz one time to have that much pressure from the corner rushers, and it was just amazing. Like, the defense, I feel like I love our offense. I think we can match anybody any given day, any given Sunday. But the way that defense held it, I think there's a lot we can learn from that. And it's hard for me to say that because, you know, we look at Sean McDermott as a defensive coach, but, you know, we got to call a spade sometimes. So I hope they take last night's game. Maybe they look at some video and they say, maybe this is what we need to sign. Maybe this is what we need to draft. I mean, is it that who's that person that's calling out of Cleveland? Maybe we get him.
Yeah, Myles Garrett. Listen. Good points, Nikki. I mean, you got to have the players, though, to do that in order to get home. And I think that's the point here where, yeah, you can. I mean, it is a defensive coordinator's dream to be able to get home with four like that last night. They didn't even blitz, and they did, because they dominated their offensive line. By the way, good tweet from our buddy Joe Marino, which I retweeted here. And this goes on the heels of all of this talk about, oh, my God, Brett Veach, Kansas City, they're unbelievable drafting. They know, my God, Hall of Fame drafters here, right? And I've said for the last few weeks, Like, they have a lot of misses, too. Kansas City has a lot of misses. The difference is some of their hits have been really good hits, right? Trent McDuffie's been amazing, and they traded up for him and got him right before Kyrie Elam, and that's been great. Worthy was terrific last night. I still don't think Worthy is this undeniable, oh my God, great draft pick. He had 500 yards receiving this year, and it didn't go great all year until, you know, down the stretch, which seems like it's working a little bit more. But yeah, Creed Humphrey, really, really nice player inside. They've had a lot of really nice picks. Karlaftis, no doubt. No doubt. They've also had a lot of misses, and I pointed them out. Sky Moore, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and last year's first-round pick, his name escapes me right now. But Joe Marino just posted this morning on Twitter, and he's right. He said, if you can't see how Chiefs GM Brett Veach's miscalculations at offensive tackle, edge rusher, and corner got exposed last night, I don't know what to tell you. He's a great GM, but the flawless portrayal of him has been ridiculous over the last few weeks. I agree, Joe. Prisoners of the moment. These guys, these couple players are better than the guys I got, so that means that their GM and coach are so much better, right? That's what we do sometimes. Howie Roseman has put together an unbelievable roster with the Eagles, what they have. And that's with a Jalen Hurts quarterback he's not elite, right? He's not in the Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow category. He's damn good. But he's Super Bowl MVP now. Anyway, good tweet from Joe there. We'll take a timeout. Evan Lazar up next from Patriots.com, Catch-22 podcast. We'll talk about the Bills' new reported hire, Mike Pellegrino, at corner. Does that mean the Bills might start shifting a little bit towards man-to-man? What is his pedigree? And we'll talk a little NFL draft with Evan Lazar up next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Four-man rush. Pressure again. Mahomes in trouble. Mahomes sacked again. Third of the day for Philadelphia.
3 of 6 right there for the Eagles. How about this stat I just ran across? According to Next Gen Stats, Eagles did not blitz one time in 42 dropbacks. That is just the fourth defense to not blitz in a game at all. I think any game in the Next Gen Stats era. Amazing how they were able to get to Patrick Mahomes. Welcome back. It's the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with here. Here with you on a Buffalo football Monday, a happy Monday here that the Chiefs lost, but we're going to go out to the Western Hotline and talk with our guy, Evan Lazar. We've talked to Evan plenty over the years about the New England Patriots, and we'll get to them as well. Want to get his thoughts, though, on the Super Bowl last night and also on the upcoming NFL draft. Good morning, buddy. Thanks for joining me as usual.
Anytime, Sal. How are we doing?
I'm doing well. Let me ask you, we're very happy here in Buffalo, like the fan base. Okay, Patriots, Chiefs get crushed on the national stage. Is the feeling the same from a previous dynasty who's watching this dynasty rise that happened last night?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think everybody was trying to give the Chiefs their flowers a little bit and trying to be unbiased about it. And then once the game started, at least for me, myself, once the game started, I realized how much I was kind of pulling for the Eagles, as this sort of unfolded. And, it's a feather in the Patriots cap that they went to 9 Super Bowls and they were in 1-score games in all 9 of them, right? Like they were never blown out of a Super Bowl and they never had a dud like that on the biggest stage like the Chiefs did. So it's going to be even tougher now to pass Tom Brady and Bill Belichick if you're Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And when you watched last night, how surprised were you how it unfolded, Evan?
I was surprised because of just the lack of preparation and answers it seemed like the Chiefs had on offense for Vic Fangio and that Eagles defense. You think of Andy Reid as this wizard of an offensive mind and to just completely have zero answers whatsoever. It was surprising, but at the same time, when you looked at the matchup on paper, you know, the Chiefs offensive line against the Eagles defensive line was a huge mismatch in Philly's favor. And I think all of us are coming out of this game now saying to ourselves, if you can't win in the trenches, if you can't pass protect and you can't rush the passer on the other side, it's going to be a tough time to win a Super Bowl like that. So I think that's the number one takeaway for everybody right now is the trenches rule. They still do.
No doubt about it. Evan Lazar joined me here on the West Her Hotline. All right, so let's shift gears and talk about the team that you cover mostly, the New England Patriots, and obviously a new regime coming in, Mike Vrabel. And is that something of a priority with them as well? There were some scuttlebutt that maybe they're interested in T.J. Watt. I don't know how real that was about a few weeks ago. I've seen that. Is that something that they need to do is upgrade their pass rush, and how do they go about doing that?
Oh, absolutely. That to me, their pass rush and their pass protection, those were some of the early words out of Vrabel's mouth in his introductory press conference is that they need to protect their quarterback, and they need to, I think the word he used is alter the opposing team's quarterback or affect the opposing team's quarterback. So either way, you know, you look at it, the Patriots last year, last in the league in sacks, 30th in pressure rate, dead last in pass block win rate on the other side of the ball. They lost in the trenches significantly over the last 2 years. They're the worst team in the league in pass protection, according to ESPN's win rate stats. So that's where it starts for the Patriots. I know a lot of people around here are clamoring for that number one wide receiver to pair him with Drake May, whether it's T. Higgins or drafting Travis Hunter or whatever the case may be. But I do think the focus for Vrabel and for the personnel side of things right now is going to be on the offensive and defensive line.
Before I get to those players and how they go about that, what about the coaching staff that he's putting together? Some interesting hires. I know I've read some of your colleagues talking about and wondering where the fits are specifically and how this is all going to mesh. What are we looking at? What do the Patriots schematically look like and coaching-wise in 2025?
Well, defensively, I do think they're going to be a little bit different and more Tennessee Titans, if you will, on that side of the ball. Basically, all the coaches that Vrabel put together on the defensive side are with him in Tennessee. So they look like they're going to run what they were doing with the Titans down in Nashville. So you might see a little bit more zone coverage from the Patriots. You might see a little bit more four down. You know, Belichick has notoriously been a 3-4 defense type of guy going all the way back to his days with the Giants. So that could be a little bit different for the Patriots this time around. And offensively, there's an excitement level, a comfort level, certainly with Josh McDaniels. But I think the number one question that people have is, you know, how much is McDaniels going to evolve this system to fit Drake May versus having stationary pocket passers like Mac Jones and Tom Brady and Derek Carr in the last, you know, handful of years. So it's a big question mark with McDaniels. There's obviously a comfort and experience level that Vrabel's talked about that is good with a young quarterback, but that system is going to have to be tweaked to fit a different skill set this time around.
And then as far as acquiring that talent, they do have the fourth overall pick in the NFL draft. Is there a favorite idea amongst Patriots fans on how they should approach that?
Well, it would be nice to trade down, but I think everybody right in this draft wants to trade down. And it really comes down to who you know, likes these quarterbacks and how do you prioritize that. You know, just a quick example, if the Jets call at 4, you know, and want to come up to get one of the quarterbacks, are the Patriots going to hand a quarterback to the Jets? You know, I don't know, right? I don't know if they would do that sort of thing. So that's number one, I think, for a lot of people, myself included, just because of the amount of holes that they do have on their rosters, that trading down would be ideal. But if not, then I do expect them to go offensive or defensive line, whether that's Will Campbell from LSU or Mason Graham from Michigan, or if Abdul Carter is still there, the pass rusher from Penn State. You know, one of those guys is really enticing for all the reasons that we just talked about with the Super Bowl. That's the way that the game is won and lost, it seems like, more times than not. And the Patriots are way, way behind in terms of talent on the defensive line and offensive line.
Would the Patriots want to get involved in a Myles Garrett type of trade with the assets that it would cost?
I don't necessarily see that one coming to fruition. I think that they're going to look at players that have a certain window here to line it up with Drake May. And Myles Garrett at 29, 30 years old, I just don't know if that necessarily fits their timeline right now. Now, if somebody like Micah Parsons were to come available at 25 years old, then certainly that would be something I think they would be very interested in. And I'm not saying that they won't make calls on Myles Garrett, because I'm sure that they will. But just him putting out a statement that he wants to go to a contender, mm-hmm. Their window and what they're looking at in terms of their rebuild, it just doesn't seem like for player and for team that one in particular lines up.
Yeah, I mean, we're all about it here in Buffalo, just so you know, Evan, as you can imagine. I mean, where the Bills are right now and their build, and, you know, they're knocking on the door, and you see that they're just maybe that particular player or position away. And I don't know exactly what it's going to cost, but everybody here in Buffalo is, oh, my God, go get Myles Garrett. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I was the Bills, that's exactly the type of move I would try to make. I'm sure if the Patriots of 10 years ago had an option of going after a guy like Myles Garrett, they'd be all over it. It's just a different timeline right now, and you have to be realistic, and I think for him, I highly doubt the Patriots would be very high on Myles Garrett's list, given that the Browns are picking, what, 2, and the Patriots are at 4.
Yeah.
Like, or 3 and 4, whatever it is. It seems like that would deter him. And I think a lot of these veteran guys, it's going to be a number one topic, I'm sure, around here, Sal, with the Patriots, is how do you attract a lot of these free agents or big name veterans in the trade market? You know, can you get a T. Higgins to come here? Could you get a DK Metcalf to come here? Could you get a Myles Garrett to come here? You know, it's a tough one. Vrabel's, I think, a little bit more of a sell. Drake May's a little bit more of a sell than where they were last year, but they're still a 4-win football team that's got a long way to go.
It has not yet been confirmed or by the Bills or anyone on our side, but I will say there's a report from Matt Zenitz, who writes for CBS Sports and 247 Sports, that cornerbacks coach of the Patriots for the last 10 years, Mike Pellegrino, will be joining the Bills. Now, this is on the heels of reports that Scott Booker, the Bills' nickel coach, is going to join the Patriots. He was on Vrabel's staff in Tennessee, so that makes sense that that would happen. And if the Bills do bring over, it's a kind of a coach trade for trade, I guess, a coach for coach trade here. But it is making us wonder here, because of what you said about maybe more zone defense coming from Vrabel. Is Pellegrino more versed in the man-to-man system? What has been the Patriots' MO over the last 10 years, and what can you tell us about Mike Pellegrino if this is indeed true?
Yeah, first off, with Pellegrino, it's a great person and a great coach. I think you guys got a really good one there. And we've had the pleasure of talking to him plenty over the years and media availabilities and things like that. And he's a player's coach. He's for his guys. You know, he's very, very detailed. He's a very smart guy. Went to Johns Hopkins University, played lacrosse down there. That's how he first got on Bill Belichick's radar, was a little, you know.
Of course.
Football crossover there. So he played lax, and then Belichick, met up with him and became a coaching assistant for the Patriots. And then Josh Boyer, who was the Patriots cornerbacks coach through a couple of Super Bowls, he ended up going with Brian Flores to Miami to be the defensive coordinator of the Dolphins when Flores became the head coach there. And Mike Pellegrino was then elevated to cornerbacks coach and took it from there. You know, defensive player of the year, campaign for Stephon Gilmore under Pellegrino, really good developer corners, you know, JC Jackson, Christian Gonzalez has obviously flourished when he's on the field with Mike Pellegrino over the last couple of years. So a lot of Patriots fans were hoping that they were going to keep Pellegrino on Vrabel's staff. Vrabel's decided to go with his guys. You mentioned Booker and Hamilton, a couple other guys that were with him in Tennessee instead. But I know there was a lot of people that really supported Pellegrino staying here with the Patriots because of the work that he's done. It's not just those top guys. I mean, he's done a really nice job of getting guys onboarded and developing those guys that are UDFAs or late round draft picks like a JC Jackson.
I know that, you know, Bill Belichick did morph his systems over the years, but has it been primarily more of a man or a zone? Could you point to one or the other? And the reason I ask is, after what the Bills did this year, and again, Sean McDermott has had a tried and true system for him that's been a very heavy zone defense, but we saw maybe a little shift towards the back end of this year, a little bit more man-to-man. We see what these other teams are doing, and we're starting to wonder, maybe the Bills are going to go a little bit more man-to-man. What have the Patriots primarily run over the last 10 years?
Yeah, definitely a man-to-man defense for about at least a half decade, I would say. You know, Belichick was always so, scheme-specific based off of personnel, but when he had that number one corner, that Darrell Revis, that Stephon Gilmore, now Christian Gonzalez last year, like when he had that number one guy, he was a defense that would want to play a lot of man-to-man. So they've been one of the more man-coverage-heavy defenses in the NFL for the last half a decade, going back to really getting Gilmore in 2017. So you're going to see a lot of, you know, he's got a great feel for man-to-man with Pellegrino. I don't think it's the only thing he can coach. I think he is a versatile coach. But if you want to run more man-to-man coverage and you want to take some of that Belichick stuff, you know, divider rules and leverage and all that kind of thing, helping the middle of the field with the post safety and the robber and all the good things the Patriots have done with their man-to-man coverages, then Pellegrino can definitely coach that up and get guys up to speed. I think one of the best things that the Patriots man coverage system in the past in Belichick's world that they've been able to do is simplify things for corners. So it doesn't feel like you're completely on an island out there with the receiver who can run anywhere he wants. You know, they do a really nice job of funneling to help and providing help and doing that sort of thing. And then obviously they have their different doubles and brackets and things like that too, when they do play, you know, a Justin Jefferson or somebody of that ilk. So they have a lot of answers in man coverage, and they've done a really nice job with it over the years. And it just seems like guys are calm, they're patient, they don't really seem overly exposed when they play man-to-man a lot. So they do a lot of good things.
Evan Lazar, before I let you go, are the Bruins going to be buyers or sellers at the deadline?
Oh, man, I think they're going to probably stay pat right now, because I don't know who's going to be in charge of the Bruins next season. And I wonder if ownership is going to, you know, not want them to do anything drastic, you know, one way or the other. Because I do think that, you know, the interim coach, I doubt will stay long term. And I don't know if Don Sweeney is staying long term either. So would you want the guy, you know, lame duck running your deadline? Probably not. So I could see that happening.
Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of fans are very sour on Sweeney. There was a Fire Sweeney chant going on, I think, at the Garden, I think, a couple weeks ago, wasn't there?
I might have started it, no.
I love it. Great job, buddy. Hey, are you going to be at the Combine in Indy?
Yes, I will.
All right,
I'll
see you there. We'll catch up then. We'll talk a little draft, okay, bud?
Absolutely, Sal. Anytime.
All right, you got it. That is Evan Lazar. You can catch him at EZ Lazar on Twitter /X. And of course, he is the Patriots Catch 22 at Patriots.com. Check him out. Does really good work. Patriots offseason, the draft, and of course, some thoughts right there on the Super Bowl. We'll get John Ledyard. Same thing. Thoughts on the Super Bowl. Also, John is very heavy into the draft. We'll talk with him about some of the D linemen that might be available. He's been pouring over for the Buffalo Bills, defensive tackles, defensive ends, pass rushers. We'll do that. And some other thoughts at 11 a.m. here. We'll take a timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, a couple of reports coming out in the NFL over the weekend as well. Aaron Rodgers not going back to the Jets. I don't think this is like a huge surprise, but apparently what happened? He flew out to New Jersey and they met with him, right? Is that it, Josh? He flew out and they're like, hey, by the way, thanks for coming. You can go back now because we don't want you anymore, right?
That's such a, like, if they really want to like get back at him or whatever, that's kind of the way to do it.
Well, I mean, hey, yeah. It's the guy that's all about all the drama and me, right? Hey, we're going to
Give him a taste of his own medicine.
Right, exactly. It sounds like that is the case in some regard. What do the Jets do now? Do they go out into the quarterback market? I mean, I can't imagine a guy like Sam Darnold going back to the Jets, right? Could you imagine that? I can't imagine
that. I mean, it is a completely new regime, so.
It is, but man, that would be wild.
He should do it just because. Like, that'd be so funny, I think.
There's a lot of smoke right now about Darnold to the Raiders, actually. Interesting, right? What do you think?
It's not bad. It's better than what they have, but it's probably the best option for him right now, too, unless they draft the guy.
And then Deebo Samuel apparently wants out of San Francisco. I mean, I was all about Deebo a couple years ago. Not as much anymore. I mean, you know, he's kind of a little bit more broken down now. Let me see his last couple years. He's just not the same player that he was. The way he plays, right? I mean, he's a terror with the ball in his hands. And the way he plays, he's kind of gotten beaten up over the last couple of years. You know what? He did play 15 games the last couple of years. All right. I mean, 51 catches, 670 yards. Still a decent player, good player. I mean, it's not like it was a couple of years ago coming off a 1,400-yard season, though. Holy cow. Remember that?
It's also the last year of his deal.
Yeah, and I mean, 136 yards rushing this year. Yeah, 3.2 yards. If you look at, you know, they give him the ball in these situations, less than 4 yards a carry in those situations as well. But anyway, not a good player. But I don't know what he has left in the tank. But that was interesting coming out as well. John Ledyard going to join me next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You can still give us a call. It's Getting Connected with Our Fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. John joins me next to talk Super Bowl, NFL draft, and we'll sprinkle in a little Bucks and Steelers offseason as well, since he follows both those teams.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, now we're to go here on a football Monday. We usually call it Buffalo Football Monday. We can do that. It's a feel-good Monday here in Western New York. A lot of people are very happy about the result last night. 40-22. The Eagles just dominate the Kansas City Chiefs. Jalen Hurts named Super Bowl MVP. I thought it should have went to one of the defenders. No disrespect to Jalen. He was fine. He was very good. But one of the defenders on the Eagles, maybe Josh Sweat, somebody, the entire defense, whatever. Give it to Vic Fangio. I don't know. But that was how they won this game. Their defense was just incredible and swarming and smothering over the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. Joining me now on the Wester Hotline to talk about that, as well as some offseason stuff with the Buccaneers and the Steelers, two teams that he talks about and covers, and, of course, the NFL draft, is our buddy John Ledyard. John, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great, Sal. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem at all. I mean, is that the story for you last night? Was it just how incredible the Eagles' defense dominated, especially up front?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the playoffs for a long time, I think, have been a testament to how important it is to be able to go four down and go with your front defensively, I think. And so, yeah, when Philly was able to do that at the level that they were able to do that at, and that wasn't a new thing, right? I mean, that was something that certainly had happened all season long. That's something they become known for. It's something when they beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl years ago. I mean, Howie Roseman has just understood that better than most GMs, is that you have to be able to go four down and go, not rely totally on the blitz to be able to be successful in the playoffs. And I mean, Spags has done a great job of balancing that during Kansas City's dynasty over the years, probably a better job of balancing it than other guys we've seen. Todd Bowles in the Super Bowl against Mahomes, if you remember, hardly blitzed at all in that game for a guy who was extremely blitz heavy. The 49ers have been one of the top four down and go pass rush teams in the league. So it's just an absolutely essential staple of successful defenses to get to championship-level success right now, and nobody has done it better than Philly.
No, it's just so hard to get those guys, right, John? I mean, it's a defensive coordinator's dream to have you get home with the front four. How did they do it? How did they grab these guys, get these guys? Is it just Howie Roseman and great drafting? What was it, Vic Fangio scheme? How were they able to have this type of group to be able to play without blitzing?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is great drafting, because if you look, everybody, I think literally everybody that plays on their front, they've drafted. I mean, certainly all their best players, like, you know, I mean, Jalen Carter and Milton Williams stand out a lot. Nolan Smith was drafted. A lot of people really question just because how little he played at Georgia. He was my number two edge rusher in that class after Will Anderson, but a lot of people had, I think, fair questions about him. I kind of believed anyway, but I mean, I think there's all these guys, they value traits, first of all. I mean, Carter obviously is like one of the luckiest things that ever happened to a team. So you need some of that. Let's not kid ourselves. But, you know, Milton Williams was a guy who basically had to teach to pass rush, but he had unbelievable traits. And he just barely got to rush in college. He was kind of reading run, and he was playing as a 4-eye. And so being able to just tee off and go, he just had to learn moves and how to attack people. And now he's at his breakout. And so they train and develop guys really well, but they also scout the traits and the mentality then too, is the other thing. I think, you know, you think about, they tried to do it from the outside, right? They lost Hassan Reddick and they tried to replace with Bryce Huff, and it just didn't work. He basically was a negative in the rotation, and Nolan Smith kind of took off. And so it shows how well they develop players from the ground up in their system and how well they've been able to draft. Obviously Josh Sweat was another kind of fortuitous one. I thought I had a first round grade on Josh Sweat that year, years ago, but he had some health concerns that dropped him, I think, to the fifth round with a knee that people thought would be degenerative. Turns out he's a beast and had 10 pressures and 3 sacks in the Super Bowl. So, you know, I think that they just value the right type of player, the right traits at that position, pass rush athleticism, which, you know, I talk about every year leading up to the draft. It matters so, so, so much. And they consistently take guys who finish very well in what I would consider the top pass rush athletic traits.
What was your evaluation on Cooper DeJean coming out of college? And what do you think about the year that he put together?
Yeah, I just thought he was awesome. You know, I just loved his tape. I thought he was super aware. You know, I think a lot of people didn't think he could play corner. And I just think people really kind of overvalue a little bit. They thought he was a little bit stiff. And I think people overvalue that just a little bit because, you know, you'd like every corner to look sort of like Jaire Alexander and how they move. But the reality of today's NFL is that you're not playing man coverage a ton in today's league. There are certainly pressed times that you need to press and trail guys, and you need to be able to run, but you're not just purely matchup man all game long, you know, in and out of the route stem, staying with guys. And I think people thought, oh, well, he can't do that at high level, so he can't be really good in the NFL. Well, number one, he's in a very versatile defense now. He's also playing in the slot, which I thought was another part of his value, was that there was so much versatility there. And the biggest thing with DeJean, he just doesn't make mistakes. You know, that's so rare for a rookie, but I just don't know if he's made a mistake. I've watched most of their games this year. I just don't know if he's made a mistake in coverage all season. He's just always in the right place, always reads out the route patterns correctly, always in the flat, hardly ever misses a tackle, which that position is just so, with how much zone defense you play, you basically need your slot to be a force defender against the run. All the flat concepts and screens and bubbles and tunnels the teams run, they have to be able to ID and trigger on those. They have to be able to get depth, just like he did on the interception, and take away routes down the field. You have to have great feel. And he just says all that stuff. So it was just a home run pick. The fact that he was there was, you know, a mistake by other teams, I think, but just a home run pick for the Eagles that has really paid dividends for them this year.
On the other side, for the Kansas City Chiefs, we live here in this fear bunker kind of, John, right, in Buffalo, because the Bills can't get over the Chiefs, of course, and everything the Chiefs do is great and right, and all these great picks that, you know, they have that the Buffalo Bills don't, and no doubt they've hit on some. They also have a lot of misses, but was last night more for you like, man, one team just played great and was better and played great, and one team didn't have their best day, or was last night maybe some sort of indictment for anything on the Chiefs for you?
Yeah, I think we would be. I think it would be a little bit lazy of us in our analysis to not look at it a little bit more critically from the Chiefs, right? Because, like, we talked about this last year. Like, their process, when you look at how other teams are successful in the NFL, was certainly abnormal. You know, not really prioritizing offensive tackle to the degree. I mean, they did sign Juwan Taylor, so I guess it's unfair to say that. But certainly, like, having holes there. You know, Donovan Smith was kind of a late signing that, like, last year, that just wasn't, you know, nobody was picking him up or itching to get him. And so sort of being able to play on the margins on your edges on offense, and then obviously a wide receiver, that was where it was most notably talked about, which just seemed like there were some big gaps in there compared to how other really good teams were operating. And they got away with it, and they won a Super Bowl anyway, because, you know, Mahomes and Spags and Andy Reid, and, you know, when he needed to be, Travis Kelce, were just that good. But I think they definitely ran that out as far as it could go this season. And I think if they don't shift, they are going to have to – I think they're going to run up into more problems in the future. I think Veach has done a good job giving them kind of what they like. They've done a great job replacing talent in the secondary. That kind of got ran out a bit this year. They missed – I mean, L'Jarius Sneed wasn't L'Jarius Sneed this year for the Titans, but they missed a player like that. Jamari Connor just – couldn't replace that skill set. The outside guys really struggled to replace what he gave them. They really could have used another really good corner. Joshua Williams was banged up. Jalen Watson has this really rough Super Bowl. So they just never really filled that hole. Pass rush-wise, I thought they did fine all season, but there were just too many issues at corner, which has been something they've been able to replace readily on this team, and too many issues at offensive line, to the point that they had to move one of their best offensive linemen to a position he wasn't even very good at, right, to try and make it work. So just too many big holes at key positions. Obviously, losing Rice to injury hurt. But, you know, they had a great season. But I think ultimately the margins are really small when you get up against a really good team like this. And I think that they found that out the hard way in this game.
John Ledyard joining me here on the Western Hotline, Audibles and Analytics Pod. You can find him on Twitter, at Ledyard NFL Draft. Let's talk about the draft. All right, so the Bills are in this space where, and of course, after last night, I think 31 other teams are saying, oh my God, we need to do what the Eagles did. And that's the prisoner of the moment. But here in Buffalo, it's true. I mean, every time they bowed out of the playoffs the last few years, it's pretty much been the same mantra of they have not been able to get enough of a pass rush. They have some nice players, Greg Rousseau, A.J. Epenesa, Ed Oliver. They took a swing on Von Miller a few years ago, but they kind of don't have that difference maker, John. This appears to be, from everything I've read, one of the better drafts for that area, whether it's defensive tackle or defensive end. Would you agree with that? Do you think there's going to be some pretty good talent available at 30, assuming the Bills are picking there?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's hard to know, you know, as you know, this far out in the draft, like, who's actually going to be on the board at 30, especially because the last couple of years we've seen a little bit of a run on edge defenders, or at least some of the more recent drafts, you've seen a little bit of a run on edge defenders as it gets toward the end of the first round.
Yep.
Because exactly what you talked about, those playoff teams that are drafting there are almost always looking to add to that position group because, yeah, I mean, you said prisoner of the moment, and I think it's like that for some people to realize that, but, I mean, this is something we talk about every year this time of year, like, because of what I laid out, like, the Chiefs, the Eagles, the 49ers, like, these teams are almost always really good pass rush teams, and if you look at criticisms of the Bills and criticisms of the Ravens, it's that they haven't been able to get that part of their defense over the top, I think, as you mentioned. So I do think that there'll be talent, certainly in the back end of the first round still. It'll be interesting to see how many of these guys kind of stock rises. You can usually get a good feel for that during the pre-draft process, you know, whether a guy like Nick Scorton, who I think, you know, I think he's somebody who, traits-wise, I don't think is going to test that great. So I bet he falls down the board some. I think I've seen him in the teens. I've seen him pretty commonly mocked inside the top 20. I think he's going to be available late in the first round. So he could be one. Texas A&M edge rusher, real good with his hands, but you wonder about the traits there. As I mentioned, obviously, I value that part of the game a lot. And you also just wonder what type of player the Bills are looking for, too, because a player like Shamar Stewart, if they are going to continue to go kind of heavy edge, Mykal Williams from Georgia, I think those are guys that fit that build if they're looking for sort of the frame more in the vein of Rousseau or Epinesa, some of the guys they've drafted. I don't know if, you know, Basham probably less likely to go right. that route given how it worked out, but, you know, or if they're trying to go with a more explosive tee off and rush type of player, which I think would be wise, to be honest. But those guys with those elite traits often can go a little bit higher in the draft. So I think there's going to be options for them for sure. You know, I think it's really a matter, what is the prototype? What do they think is successful? Are they going to value pass rush traits over some of the physical traits or run defense stuff? You know, I think that's going to be a key part of them kind of self-examining their evaluation process to try and improve some of their hit rates that they've had at that position.
I've heard people say this could be even a year you could double dip up front. There's so much talent available, especially, you know, into the, you know, second or third round type of value. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's players that you can – I mean, Landon Jackson's another one that fits the prototype, the Arkansas edge rusher, who I actually really like. I don't know how bendy he is, but he really has good hands to corner, and he's got just, like, an unbelievable frame, plays really hard. If Bills fans are interested, just because he fits sort of the prototype of players they've drafted in the past, I think his tape against Will Campbell – he didn't win every rep, and, you know, Will Campbell's obviously tough test, but Landon Jackson played a really good slate of college tackles, and sometimes he plays inside for Arkansas, but when he just got to be a pure edge defender, which is what I think he'll be in the NFL, I really think that some of his traits shown in that matchup, he had some really nice wins against Will Campbell. Now, he's not the bendiest guy. He can lose his balance going around the edge, so maybe there are some limitations there. How he tests is going to be really huge. But, yeah, there's guys certainly. Cal Kennard from South Carolina had some good flashes at the Senior Bowl, I think. You know, he's a player that's interesting. A little bit older, 23 already, but he's interesting to some teams, and there'll be players that certainly rise up the board as you go. So, yeah, I think there are definitely guys, even into day two in this class, who have been productive. It's just, I think if Bills fans are watching, watch during the combine and see how many of these guys test at a high level, mm-hmm. looking at explosiveness, 10-yard split, the jumps, and then I think also the three cone, just to see what the bend flexibility looks like for these guys. Because players with those high-end traits typically tend to go higher and tend to have more upside as pass rushers in the NFL.
The last several years, John, we've just seen this incredible group of wide receivers year after year. It doesn't seem quite like that this year from what I've seen. You've dug into it more than me. Is that correct, that maybe you don't have quite the depth, especially early on at wide receiver? Because that might be a spot where the Bills might look to add as well. I know Josh Allen just won MVP, but part of it is because people said he didn't really have a great cast around him.
Yeah, wide receiver is always a funny one because there's always so many there's so many to play in the league, and there's college offenses are using, you know, three or four now at a time and rotating guys. And so there's always so many that there's always going to be good players in a class, but it definitely doesn't seem like there's the high-end talent that we've had in some of the more special classes over the last couple of years, certainly. You know, last year's class was a good example of that, too. And so, you know, I think McMillan has things that are really interesting with his size and his ball skills. You know, I think even some of the speed rumors that you hear about him, but, you know, are the finer points of the game there. Luther Burden just had this kind of down year statistically. I think Matthew Golden is picking up steam a lot. He's a little bit slight in his frame, but I think his tape is really good from Texas. He's really explosive. Amika Egbuka from Ohio State is just kind of like the guy that everybody would love to get in like the second or third round, but is he going to go, you know, in this draft, which isn't, you know, thought of too highly, is he going to go really high? Kind of a glue inside outside guy who does everything cerebrally at a high level, even if he isn't like a special athlete at the position. So it is a little bit of a flavor. You will see guys that emerge too, even at the Senior Bowl. There was, you know, conversations, Jalen Royals and Jaden Higgins, like, are these guys going to be flying up the board? But yeah, definitely seems like a down year for most position groups, but I think definitely you're seeing that at wide receiver.
Where are you with the quarterbacks, and especially, excuse me, related to the top of the draft, and maybe what Tennessee, Cleveland, and the Giants should all do?
Yeah, I mean, I there's really no rush, in my opinion, if you're some of those teams. The Giants are the one that clearly has the rush. But, I mean, if you're looking at the Titans, you know, what's the big rush there? They just, you know, I mean, unless you're thinking you're Callahan, but certainly if you're, you know, looking at it from the new GM's perspective or the regime's perspective, it's going to be a long rebuild. They just spent the most money last year of any team during free agency and obviously finished with the first overall pick. So that's, you know, very, very bad offseason. So, you have contracts like Calvin Ridley and Lloyd Cushenberry and some guys that you have to figure out what you want to do with because you spent money and you weren't really ready. You know, Snead being another one of those guys that, you know, you weren't really ready to spend that sort of money. You weren't really ready to compete like that. So for them, it's a long-term rebuild, I think. And so I would be trying to get better on the offensive defensive lines, which is what I expect they'll do. I'll be pretty surprised, I think, if they end up going quarterback, but we are so early in the process that we'll see. I think, you know, the Raiders look like they're going to try free agency first. And so some of this, I think none of these teams want to go quarterback.
Right.
I would be surprised if any want to, but some of them, Sal, will just be, they have to. Like, what choice do the Giants have, for example, if they can't get Sam Darnold or anybody, you know what I mean? Like, and there's just so few options out there you can even talk yourself into this offseason unless something unforeseen happens, which is possible. We get one or two things every year, but, like, nobody wants to do Aaron Donalds or Kirk Cousins. Nobody wants that. But it's just like these teams have to like convince their ownership and their fans of something. And they're just, there are a couple right now that just kind of how it goes at the quarterback position that are just caught this year where there's not really free agents. There's nobody you want to really sign out there that can help you, but the draft isn't great either. And those teams would be best pursuing a path of patience, but that's not really an option for the Giants, right? I mean, Brian Dable's got to win this year. Joe Shane's got to win this year. And so those guys are feeling the heat, I think. And because of that, you know, if they can't do anything at the top of the free agent market, and they'll try to make it, obviously they've got some things to make it look a little bit attractive with Neighbors there and stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think if they can't do anything unforeseen with the players that are out there in the NFL, they're going to be one of the bigger locks, I think, to take a quarterback at the top of the draft because they just don't have many other options.
Is Shadur the best quarterback in this draft?
You know, it's an interesting question. I don't know that I feel super confident in answering it at this time. I want to see some more tape, but I don't even know how much that's going to tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Both these guys have really odd demeanors in their game. Obviously, by the way, quarterback just being such a crapshoot to evaluate anyway. Look at, you know, Bo Nix is better than Caleb Williams last year. Absolutely nobody thought that would be the case. We'll see what happens moving forward. But, I mean, I think Ward is just like, I mean, both these guys are so, like, laissez-faire in the pocket, just, like, so calm in their demeanor. And I think that can either be a really good thing or it can literally be their downfall in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like, they are unusually, like, Lamar Jackson-like calm in the pocket just at all times. And sometimes they take terrible sacks, put themselves in awful situations just because of how chill they are. But at other times, it, like, keeps them from panicking or making a really bad decision with the football. So they're really tricky to evaluate, I think. You know, Ward definitely has better traits than Sanders, is certainly more of the prototypical from a size, arm strength perspective, what you're looking for. There's something about Sanders, and we'll see if, you know, kind of as the draft process goes on, he's going to be like one of the most interesting interviews because there's all this, you know, oh, he's spoiled, he's this, he's that. But then there's also this like really impressive side of him. So
yeah.
I think he's going to be like so polarizing to people. And that intangibles character part is massive for quarterbacks, and we don't get a lot of insight into that. That's the part I'd want to know the most about these guys because they both need work. And so whoever would impress the team more in that area, I'd probably be inclined because they're probably going to be close enough for me to see it that way. But yeah, I mean, there's some really unorthodox things to both of their process that I would be shocked works in the NFL if they keep doing it. So it's kind of going to be about who's able to weed some of that stuff out and keep the good stuff. And it's just going to be a complete, I think, toss-up between which one of these guys is better.
The two teams you cover and talk about the most, the Bucs and the Steelers, both on the Bills' schedule next year. Let's start with the Bucs. What's the number one thing they have to figure out this offseason?
They need to figure out how to play different ways defensively. They're exactly what we just talked about, Sal. They're just so dependent on blitzing, and they're the heaviest blitz team every year, them and the Vikings and Flores, wherever Flores is. And so, you know, and that's great to a degree. Like, there's games where they can dominate because of that and just completely disrupt another team. Coincidentally, Philly has had a ton of issues with them over the years. But, you know, they just get into too many matchups when you go through the playoffs where you can't succeed that way. You have to find ways to get pressure with four. And so I think that's a big part of their offseason. They haven't really that's not really how they've built. You know, if you look at Todd Bowles' defenses over the years, they've really built from the inside out, a defensive tackle and linebacker. So My guess is their top, they have, you know, linebacker circled as their top need. Lavonte David's definitely fading. You know, he's 35. It's, you know, it's hard to, even if he comes back, it's hard to really count on him to be an every down, every snap type of guy. And so I think, you know, they don't have anything on the roster that's even playable outside of him. And so they need to prioritize probably getting, you know, maybe even two or three linebackers in the building, you know, at least two guys who can play probably, and look at a snap share for David this upcoming season. So I think that'll be their top need, top position going into the offseason.
Who is the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers on opening day in 2025?
I don't think it'll be Justin Fields or Russell Wilson.
Wow, okay.
Here's what I think, and slash a little bit of what I've heard. I don't think they want to sign Russell Wilson. I don't think that's their first inclination, but they also are realistic enough to keep that line open, you know, to keep that line of communication open with him and his agent. Because, yeah, just if you look at the offseason, and there's a very real chance that nothing pops. You know, they're monitoring the Darnold thing. They're monitoring the Stafford stuff. Like, they're, you know, I think Geno Smith, they just recently, you know, they were like, we can win a Super Bowl with Geno Smith. So I think that's part off the table. But they're monitoring all that stuff. But it just doesn't seem super likely that anything is going to pop right now, or that if it did, they'd be the top option. So I think because of that, they're just like, well, we can't go into offseason into next year with just Justin Fields. And they don't, I mean, the drafting at 21, they don't want to draft a quarterback in this class that they already did, that made that mistake with Kenny Pickett, just forcing a quarterback in a bad quarterback class. So they don't want to go that route either. I don't think they really even paid attention to the quarterbacks at the Senior Bowl. So my guess is they tried it. I think they'll bring back Fields for cheap. He wants to be back for sure. He's got a legitimate chance to start. And then it will be who pops free somewhere else. I think the Steelers, just people like playing for Mike Tomlin. That's a big deal to them. You know, I have my misgivings with Tomlin that I'm pretty vocal about, but people like playing for him, and that will matter if somebody does pop free in free agency or via trade. But if they're not able to make a move there, yeah, I mean, it might very well be Fields and Wilson again, just because there's no other options. But that, to me, is the only way that those guys would both return as options. I just don't – that's not what the team wants to do at all. They're just – they realistic enough to know that that might be their only choice.
As a guy who's followed them for so long, how far away are they from the top of the AFC North?
I just think they have one of the bleakest outlooks in the NFL. You know,
wow.
You can't account for what happens with other teams.
Right.
You know, like injuries and where fall off happens. You know, people thought the Bengals might be in the Super Bowl and then they don't even make the playoffs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's that part of it's hard to account for. But, you know, if they wanted, it would be like at a, you know, like this year, 10-7 at best, and there's just no upside in the playoffs. And, you know, they just don't have any direction as a team. And that's part of the problem, is right now they're just in this in-between. They've got no process to, like, okay, we need to, you know, stockpile more picks. We need to trade a TJ Watt, you know, which I know is crazy, and I know that fans don't necessarily want to hear that. But, like, look at their team and look at Watt's age and tell me how – in what's left of Watt's prime, which he already dipped a little bit last year, like, what's left of that, are they going to be competitive? Like, you know, are they going to compete for Super Bowls? It's just hard to see a path to that, given where they're at. Offensively, they're totally rebuilding the offensive line. Their first-round pick last year, who I liked a lot, but Fiotano missed the entire season. Like, it just – where's the path for Pickens? Is somebody they could trade? You know, they can't stop having all these character issues, and the locker room that was once the most heralded thing has – drama every single week. It's just, you know, it's hard to look at them and say there's a clear path forward. You look at the game's most important positions: quarterback, big question marks; wide receivers, huge question marks; offensive tackle, huge question marks. You know, pass rush, they actually have that's A++, right? And they're still not at the top of the league in any of these pass rush statistics. How is that? How are they not even near the top with all the good pass rushers that they have? And so it's just too many corner. Like, that's an important – their corners were awful last year and the year before. And so they just have not found a way forward at so many of these key positions. And I think that that has really, really hurt the ability of this roster to even grow. And I like some of the young players, but there's just not enough of them, I think, to turn this thing around, especially with – I mean, quarterback and offensive coordinator are the most important parts, in my opinion, of any organization. You know, when you look at the on-field product, and I think they're just, like, bottom tier in both of those areas with Arthur Smith and whoever they have at quarterback. So those are just really hard obstacles to overcome if you're going to compete for division titles and championships.
John, I kept you long. I really appreciate it. I do have one more from an outsider's perspective. You had a really nice tweet about Josh Allen winning the MVP. It's been very polarizing. I'm glad that you tweeted what you did, and I think you were complimentary of it, but we've gone through a lot of toxicity publicity here in Buffalo with Josh Allen winning the MVP. We're very happy, of course. But what were your thoughts on him taking home that award?
I mean, it's just completely deserved. I have no idea why people wouldn't have expected Josh Allen to win MVP. You know, right. I mean, certainly Lamar Jackson wouldn't have been surprising at all either. But it's really funny, Sal. People cannot in their minds accept the fact that multiple players are deserving of an award
right.
every year, almost. It's just, like, impossible for them to understand. And, you know, I think Lamar, if he would have won, I would have had a list of reasons why he should have won that were extremely easy to see. And with Allen, I think extremely easy to see. You emphasize the most valuable part, which is certainly totally fair. People are like, oh, they always just pick the best player. Nobody cares about most valuable. When you emphasize most valuable as part of this, which is a perfectly acceptable tiebreaker, considering it's the name of the award, I mean, how can you not make an argument that Josh Allen is the most valuable player? Like, he didn't have, I think, in a lot of ways, what Mahomes had structure-wise even this year. As much as we talk about the Chiefs maybe being flawed, like, he didn't have a Chris Jones. He didn't have the best coaching staff. As much as I like the Bills coaching staff, he didn't have Andy Reid and Spags, who might be the best two ever to do what they do. Like, he didn't have that. He didn't have as good a team as Lamar. He didn't have, and people think Derrick Henry is incredibly valuable and belongs in the MVP conversation too. If that's the case, how can you also say that Lamar Jackson was as valuable as Josh Allen then when he had Derrick Henry as a teammate? So there's just plenty of arguments for Allen to have won this award. It was not surprising to me at all. I was surprised that other people were surprised, but he was extremely deserving, and so was Lamar. And, you know, they're both sensational players, and if you don't have them in the same tier and at the top of the entire NFL, I think you're really missing the mark.
I love it. Great job. Thank you so much for joining me today. Sorry I kept you so long, but you know what? I always love our conversations, and hoping to catch up with you in Indy, my man.
Absolutely, man. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. John Ledyard right there. Really good stuff. You can follow John at Ledyard NFL Draft on Twitter as well. All right, we'll take a timeout here. We'll come back, and want to get to a few other things. How about this? Oh, can I start looking to next year's schedule already? I mean, who's the opening night game? The Eagles. Who are they playing? The Bills do play the Eagles. But it's in Buffalo, so it's not going to be them. We can do a few other things as well as take more of your calls. 803-0550 on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
It's a 3rd and 16 for the Chiefs, and a shotgun snap from their own 24. Rolling out of the pocket, Mahomes. Lines up. It's intercepted at the 40. It picked off by DeGene, who comes to the near side, the 30. Got it back at the 20. Breaks a tackle, the 10. The 5 to the pylon. Touchdown! Eagles have got a pick six. It's Cooper DeGene. A 37-yard pick six of Patrick Mahomes.
All right, that was Kevin Harlan on the call. That really kind of did it, right? I mean, kind of put, almost put the dagger in. Like, at that point, didn't that make it 24? Did that make it 24? Or was it right before that? Let me see.
No, that was 24.
That was 24, right? Once that happened, I mean, what a beatdown it was last night. Really. 40-22, the Eagles beat the Kansas City Chiefs. They are your Super Bowl 59 champions. You know where Super Bowl 60 is, right, Josh?
San Francisco.
Levi Stadium, San Francisco. That is correct. Do you know who grew up not far from there, right? Or at least kind of nearby region, right?
There's this. He's a quarterback, right?
The MVP of the league. Josh Allen. That's the storyline next year, right? There's two huge storylines from a Bills perspective next year in the NFL. Number one, can Josh Allen, now that he's won his MVP, got his individual piece of hardware, can he get the Bills to the Super Bowl in his home area, his home, not like I say hometown, he's not from San Fran, he's from Fireball, Northern California, though. Can he get the Bills to the Super Bowl and play that game there? That would be ultimate poetic justice for him to play there. But if he does, no matter how it happens, you know who is not there? The Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, starting today, February 10th, 2025, it is a mission of the entire AFC to not let the Chiefs get to their fourth straight Super Bowl and tie the Bills what was thought to be unbreakable record of making four straight Super Bowls in the 1990s. Can't let it happen. Those are the storylines next year. And by the way, the Super Bowl 60 odds have been released. All right, of course they have been, right? Come on. And this we're doing ads for all these for FanDuel all over the place. You see it, you turn on a radio, you turn on a TV, it's odds for everything going on these days, right? Well, of course they're gonna have Super Bowl 60 odds already. Would you like to guess the top five? Here we go. Give me some NFL music. Let's play some top five. We'll keep it on because I got something after this, okay? All right. Who are the top five in whatever order? Odds right now, according to, well, I got DraftKings here. I'm sure FanDuel does as well.
So you don't want me to get the order, just guess the top five?
Sure, if you do the order, it gets you bonus points.
Ooh, okay. All right, the order, I'm going to go Ravens first.
You're already incorrect.
Okay, well, then I'll just guess the five. All right, okay. Ravens.
Fourth.
Ooh.
At plus 700.
Okay. Bills.
Third, actually, all tied for second with somebody at plus 700.
Okay.
Ravens, Bills, and who's also tied for second?
Chiefs?
Yes.
Okay.
Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, all AFC teams.
Interesting. Okay, and then the other two are NFC then?
Yes.
All right. The Lions?
They're number five. Who's number one?
Eagles.
Yes, of course. Of course. Eagles are the Super Bowl favorite for next year. I also saw another... hold on. Let me see if I can... Hold on. I'm going to try and pull this up. Odds, Super Bowl... What would LX, right? Not LIX, Super Bowl 60 odds. Here we go. Okay. Now we got another one here. Here's BetMGM. Eagles 1 at plus 650, then Ravens 2 at plus 700, then Bills and Chiefs tied at 750, then Lions. But I will tell you this, at all these sites it appears, it is the same five and then a huge, massive drop.
I was going to say, it's kind of interesting to see the Lions up there, though, because of the fact that they lost Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn.
Right.
Like, I really think that that's going to do a number on them.
But you're going from plus 650, plus 700, plus 750, plus 850. The next is plus 1,300 to San Francisco. Like, that's the drop.
Who else is around San Francisco? Is it like, is that like another tier?
And then there's another tier after that that includes the Commanders, the Packers, and the Bengals.
Ooh, I like the Commanders being up there.
I know. That's pretty good value, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, they were on fire this year. I don't think it's going to be the same next year, but who knows? If they hit on some of their picks.
This one here, this is DraftKings. You got Eagles, Bills. They got Eagles. Okay, here's another different one I found from DraftKings. Eagles, Bills, number two alone. Lions, number three alone. And then a huge drop to the Packers. Oh, no, this is why. I'm sorry. I'm looking at it wrong. Okay, sorry. Eagles and Chiefs are up top. Here we go. Eagles, then Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, all in a bunch. Then Lions, then again, huge drop to Niners, and then Packers, Bengals, Commanders. Yep, they're all the same kind of five, and then Niners, and then next tier. Okay, so the Eagles win Super Bowl 59. Here are their opponents for next year at home. Let's figure out who they should open up with. Let's create the NFL schedule, Josh, all right? As you know, the Super Bowl champion opens at home on Thursday night for what's called a Sunday night football game because it's a Sunday night production. But it's Thursday night football at home. They're not playing in that Friday game internationally this year. They're playing Thursday night at home. Who will it be? You have. Here we go. They have eight possibilities. The Cowboys, the Giants, the Commanders, the Bears, the Lions, the Broncos, the Raiders, and the Rams. There are all some really good ones there.
Ooh. There's some great ones there, but it's going to be the Commanders, right? I mean, that's an NFC Championship rematch. I think it's got to be the Commanders. And it's a division rivalry. Like,
yeah.
I think there's something there. Lions, I think, is my second pick.
But who was it this year? Chiefs opened with Ravens. Last year, Chiefs opened with Lions. When is it a division game usually, though? Do they usually have division games?
That's true.
I need to go look at that. It has been, I think. But when... A lot of times it's not a division game.
I mean, you go back one after that, it's Bills and Rams. I mean, that's a non-conference game.
Correct.
Like, there's
so that's 22, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to 21. Cowboys, Buccaneers, non-division.
Yeah.
Hold on. 2020. Texans, Chiefs, non-division. Has not been a division game yet. 2019, Packers, Bears. But that was the NFL's 100th anniversary. That's why.
Oh, right.
It wasn't
right.
Because the Packers won the Super Bowl, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And the Bears certainly.
So that's right. Falcons, Eagles, after the Eagles won it the last time, non-division. Man, I'm going back here. Hold on. Chiefs, Patriots, nope. How about 2016? Panthers Broncos, the rematch of the Super Bowl the year before. How about 2015? Steelers Patriots, still no division matchups there.
Maybe they just don't do it then.
Packers Seahawks, nope.
This is wild. I would have thought they did it once.
I'm going back to 2013 now. Ravens Broncos, still no. Remember that one had to be changed location because of the baseball that was going on, right, mm-hmm. in Baltimore?
Yeah, right.
So let's go to 2012. Here we go. Nope, that's when they started on, it was different. It was a Wednesday night that year because of the convention, Cowboys-Giants. Okay, that was it. 2011, the Giants win the Super Bowl, right? They play the Cowboys to open the season on a Wednesday night. I think it was convention or something going on, whatever. So they moved it to Wednesday instead of Thursday, but that's the last time. It's only happened one time.
I think you could bring it back for this kind of game, though, because like I said, like that was, I think the Commanders didn't get as fair of a shake because of, I mean, not to say they didn't get a fair shake, but like that game got out of hand quickly. Saquon Barkley had a great game. And
yeah.
I think they would like to see
how the
Commanders progress.
Highlight Jaden Daniels on the national stage early on, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And especially if the Commanders make big offseason moves. Like, I think that game has a lot of juice, but if it's going to be non-division, I think it's going to be the Lions.
I like the way you think. I'll tell you who it's not going to be. It's not going to be the New York Giants. I can't see it. I don't, right? I think you can make a case for almost any other team.
Probably
not the Raiders.
Not the Raiders. Unless they get Sam Darnold, that could be.
Yeah,
kind of fun.
I mean, but you're right. But I don't think so. You can make a case for the Rams rematch of that divisional game. You can make a case for the Broncos and Bo Nix and Sean Payton. Probably less likely, but you can make a case. Lions for sure a case. Bears for sure a case with their new coach with Caleb Williams. I like what you mean by Commanders, and I think the Cowboys are always just a draw. It doesn't matter. Could always be the Cowboys, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a draw to see people, or if people want to see them lose by a
right.
lot, if they're gonna, you know, kind of blow it up this offseason.
Yeah, I'll tweet this out. Haven't used the Extra Point Twitter account very much lately, so I'm gonna try and log. If I still have my login credentials to the Extra Point Twitter account, I'll log into that. I'll tweet this out, and you can respond. You can find it at Sal Sports as well. I'll retweet it there. One segment left here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Josh, you gave me wrong information earlier. A.J. Brown made it 24-0. Cooper DeJean made it 17-0.
Oh.
It's okay, buddy. I'll forgive you.
It's hard to keep track of that many points. I mean.
I love it. You're right about that. All right. Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I did it. I tweeted out from the Extra Point Show Twitter account. And then I retweeted it at Sal Sports. Who do the Eagles open the 2025 season with on Thursday night? Here are their 8 home opponents. FYI, interesting, there hasn't been an opener against a divisional opponent since 2012. You got Cowboys, Giants, Commanders, Bears, Lions, Broncos, Raiders, Rams. I think Commanders fits the best if they do want to go to the divisional route. Well, I'm sure that Matt Bove and I will have Mike North on our Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast as we get closer to the draft, and I'll ask him about that. Like, do you try to steer away from that? Is there a reason for that? Is it random? He won't give all the goods because he doesn't want to, you know, ruin who's going to be revealed as the opener, but we'll talk to him about that. Speaking of Always Game Day in Buffalo, Matt and I are going to record today, this afternoon. We'll recap this. We'll talk about the rumored or reported coaching changes on the Bills staff, including, by the way, Matthew Smiley, who I really didn't talk about at all today, reportedly parting ways with the Bills. The Bills are parting ways with him. Matthew Smiley, the Bills special teams coordinator, who a lot of people felt that was deserved and they should do that. But Sean McDermott had said at his postseason press conference that wasn't happening, but something obviously changed if that is indeed accurate. So we'll talk about that on the It's Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast. You can listen to that wherever you pod. You can also watch it on YouTube, at Sal Sports, by the way. Thank you all of you who've come to the Sal Sports YouTube page. Keep doing that. We're close to 12,000 subscribers. Lots of great content, Bills and otherwise, especially It's Always Game Day in Buffalo, at Sal Sports on YouTube. All right, real quick, Four Nations Faceoff. What is the schedule? When do they start? When's the first game?
Wednesday.
Who plays?
U.S. and Canada plays on Saturday in Canada, which is going to be, that's going to be a big game.
What time?
I think it'll be at like 7, probably. I'm assuming. I'm not sure.
At night?
Yet.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Like
the reason I ask
like
is
hockey.
So I'm gone next week. I'm leaving for vacation. I'll be in South Florida all day Saturday and Saturday night. So I'll get to find a spot to watch that game.
Before we get it,
I'm going on a cruise.
I mean, it should be on every TV. That game is going
to
be
okay. Electric. So I'll find a spot to watch that, no doubt. But I just want to know because next week and then then we're gonna. What is that like the last of the round robin games? That's got to be the last one then, right? If they start Wednesday,
I'm pulling up the schedule right now.
Okay,
the first game will be Canada versus Sweden.
Okay.
On Wednesday night at 8:00. So the championship game is. Wow, it's February 20th, so they kind of jump around there.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like they're going to do – like, it looks like the round robin is it. Like, there's not going to be really elimination games. It looks like everyone's just going to play.
There you go. Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and then Monday, Thursday is the championship. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, that should be fun.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about that a lot, I'm sure. Sabres Live up next. I'm sure they're going to be talking about it as well. And, of course, One Bills Live after that. Shope with the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. I'm going to join Mike Shope and the Bulldog today at 4 p.m. here on WGR. Have a great rest of your day. The Chiefs, they got buried in the Super Bowl. Have a great Monday, everybody.